The HSU Sustainable Futures Speaker Series presents Dr. Frank Kanawha Lake. Dr. Lake is giving his presentation, Learning from Traditional Knowledge to Guide the Future of Sustainable Forestry Management. He works for the USDA Forest Service Pacific Southwest Research Station Fire and Fuels Program on tribal and community forestry and related natural resource issues. Thank you for speaking with us today on KHSU, Dr. Lake.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
What are the specific traditional practices you're working on, and what is their impact on the environment?
A lot of my research focuses on the incorporation of traditional knowledge, or also a subcomponent of that is traditional fire knowledge, and looking at reinstating traditional burning in a modern context to achieve multiple resource objectives. And so the cultural history and multiple lines of evidence from Western scientific studies has revealed that tribal burning practices affected many ecosystems, habitats, and influenced other ecological processes. And so what is typically thought of maybe as a fire-dependent system or a natural fire regime, we're starting to see through different lines of scientific inquiry and also working with tribes that that was really more of a tribal or human-influenced process, and that's developed the cultural fire regimes. And so reinstating traditional burning today benefits not only the tribes and those ecosystems, but also the larger society and the public.
Can you talk about how those fires have been used in the past and how they're being used today?
Tribes, especially here in the Klamath Mountains and across the Pacific West, use traditional burning for many resource objectives and for different reasons, everything from crop management to reducing pests to increasing range or forage quality for wildlife, along their travel routes, basketry materials, many other traditional foods were enhanced by burning. And so in that regard, one of the things that I've learned from working with the Karuk tribe here locally, and Bill Tripp has stated this, is that it's not looking at how the ecosystems can provide services for humans, but how humans can provide services for ecosystems. And that traditional burning, both historically and also in a contemporary context, can achieve that. And so thinking about the ways that you promote a range of ecosystem services and many of those goods or those products that the community as well as wildlife and the other parts of the environment depend upon.
My understanding is that cultural burning became illegal on tribal lands at the beginning of the 20th century, and just now cultural burns are coming back into practice. Can you talk about some of the laws that prohibited the practices of traditional ecological knowledge and how those laws might be changing?
Well, if we go back and look at the history of colonization, particularly here in California and in this area, it was with the Spanish, one of their first laws they enacted in California was to prohibit tribal burning, and that was in part probably as a way or a method of them being able to settle areas and start to try to take over control of land and resources from California tribes. And then with the establishment of the United States and then California, and then with the forest reserves beginning around 1905, and then with the creation of national forests out of those forest reserves, in 1910 there was a severe fire year in the West, and the United States government came out with a fire suppression policy wanting to suppress all fires. And with that, around that same time, there was a debate over what they considered the fallacy of light burning, or essentially the way that many of the American settlers, some who have been even intermarried with tribes and had that cultural influence and knowledge, were beginning to want to reinstate and maintain traditional burning, but the federal government had another policy that essentially wanted to suppress and prevent fires and limited the opportunity for tribes to maintain their fire sovereignty or the use of fire that was linked to their subsistence and hunting and other land stewardship practices. And so that's when that began to change, not only as a social process, but also as an ecological condition in many of the forests and environments in the West.
What's been the impact of the illegality of cultural burns?
On the socio-cultural side, essentially colonization or settlement and then the subsequent policies reduced Native American interactions and connections and relationships with their ancestral territory, their homelands. So there was that one part, following diseases and removal and these other parts. So that limited the human ignition and stewardship that tribes were helping foster many of the diversity that the early Americans saw as resource-rich lands and territory. So there's that side of it. And then on the ecological side, with the removal of native burning, but also coupled with suppression of lightning or natural ignitions, you begin to see a buildup of fuels and a transition from a very diverse, in some ways, based on your definition of productivity, a change in the productivity or diversity of those forest types. And so areas where we had many diverse ecotones or habitats, such as open grasslands and prairies and oak woodlands and pine forest, and then mixed hardwood and other conifer forest, that began to homogenize. And with that, the increase in the densification of the expansion of many of these species that weren't being burned and kept kind of in check, you begin to also increase the fuel loading, and that increased the competition for light and water and nutrients amongst many of the forest vegetation and plants. That then also changed many of the habitats that most of the wildlife were dependent upon. And not only looking at from the wildlife, but from a tribal perspective, if fire use and burning was part of your cultural responsibility and stewardship practices in place, then that severed that opportunity for them. Being able to maintain those habitats and those places with the use of fire, but then also the horticultural or the agroforestry practices that went along with stewardship and managing the foods, basket materials, and medicines that also promoted much of the wildlife habitat that the early Americans and still I think American society values. And so it's learning what happened and the change in those fuels, the buildup of that now that threatens many of those values and those resources because of increasing temperature and with climate change, but also because of the density and the fuel loading. Now we have fires that are spreading and affecting much of that resource base in those conditions.
Is that part of the reason why the Forest Service has come to adopt some traditional ecological knowledge, or TEK, as a part of fire suppression? Or has there been a real push to really look at how the land has been successfully and sustainably managed prior to the last several hundred years?
I think it's a combination of some of those different factors as well, particularly looking at learning to live with wildfire or wildland fire in this case for the American society, and looking to the indigenous people or tribal people who were fire-dependent cultures. And so within the policy or the framework now that governs wildland fire management is the National Cohesive Strategy for Wildland Fire Management. And there's three components: resilient landscapes, fire-adapted communities, and safe and efficient wildfire response. Within that resilient landscapes part, well, by promoting the use of fire and managing wildfire for resource objectives, that helps promote the diversity and reinstates fire in areas that have ecological fire debt. On the fire-adapted communities part, and looking and learning and incorporating traditional knowledge from tribes, it helps understand the fire-dependent cultural aspect of just not looking at fire as a detrimental or as a risk or as a threat, but looking at fire as a renewal, as an important part of the ecosystem, and as also a part of your social-cultural wellness, identity, and a necessary component of the ecosystems. And then on the last part for safe and efficient wildfire response, it's just not suppressing fires, but also looking at the opportunity for fire to be used as an efficient management tool. And then working with tribes, such as the Forest Service has fire management agreement with the Karuk and the Yurok tribe here locally, that facilitates an opportunity for tribes to take a leadership role when fires are burning within their ancestral territory, to work at that government-to-government relationship as sovereigns, have designated tribal representatives and heritage consultants who then work with agency staff, incident management teams and resource specialists on the ground and fire operations specialists to essentially look at what are the pros and cons of managing that fire so we can protect values at risk, such as life, property, and some resources, but also looking at the beneficial effects of having fire essentially remove that ecological fire debt on the landscape, but then understanding the post-fire effects if they're having links to water, other forest products, and other resources that tribes and also the public depend upon.
In the past, maybe 2012 or so, or 2013, there was community organizing going on in Wichipec to be able to start doing traditional burning again and They asked, I think it was a Yurok tribal chair, to work with the Forest Service to reinstate the use of cultural burns. Were you involved with that process at the time? And was that kind of the beginning of the use of traditional ecological knowledge by the Forest Service in Humboldt County?
I was involved with different aspects of that in the Wichpec area. I started off as a graduate student working with the Karuk and Yurok basket weavers. And at the time, there was a national fire plan that generated money to help develop and create the fire safe councils. And one of the founders of the Orleans-Sonsbar Fire Safe Council had property down there around Wichpec. And in working with the Karuk basket weavers and some Yurok basket weavers, said, let's look at an opportunity where we can do hazardous fields reduction around our property with the wildland urban interface, around this major road route that goes up towards Fish Lake and out the Onion Mountain Way, and then look at how that reinstatement of those fields practices can restore some of the culturally valued species of, say, hazel and other tree species like black oak or tan oak, open up some of the grass areas. But then when doing the burning, using the guidance, in particular in that case, the women basket weavers, about how and why they want to reinstate fire. And not only would it protect the landowner and the public, but also would have the post-fire growth of the hazel basket material, improve acorn quality by reducing the pest, also opening up the understory for gathering of other medicinal plants or food species, and then also improving the wildlife that might provide hunting opportunities or other opportunities for even regalia species. And so that all kind of started around that same time. That's evolved and grown, I think, as also the Yurok community down there has developed the Yurok Cultural Fire Management Council, and they've organized families to do opportunities for projects to do hazardous fields reduction, but also follow up prescribed burning and reinstate family-based burning. And then with that, working with the Nature Conservancy, the Indigenous Peoples Burning Network, the Karuk tribe up in the Orleans-Sonsbar area, started working on the Klamath River's treks, also with the Yurok community down in Wichpec to do the Klamath River treks and the Yurok treks to reinstate, again, cross-jurisdiction, working across different ownerships, Forest Service, our federal, tribal allotments, even private landowners, to work together to bring in the resources such as the fire engines you need, the crew personnel, but also have that guidance and leadership from the community practitioners and the tribes to say, this is the way that we're going to achieve this burn, this prescribed burn today, that will meet not only the public safety needs, but also the cultural interests in promoting those cultural resources to promote tribal values.
How do you research traditional ecological knowledge?
As a research ecologist, and might also add that I'm mixed blood Native American, Chicano, and Caucasian, but I grew up with the cultural beliefs and teachings of the Karuk and Yurok. I have half siblings that are Yurok tribal members, and I'm a Karuk descendant on my father's side. So that cultural teaching and experience and being raised with those tribal philosophies and values and experiences inform and definitely influence the way that I approach my research as an agency fire ecologist or research ecologist. And in that particular part, working directly with the basket weavers or the tribal practitioners, tribal organizations, and tribes themselves, helping understand their researchable questions, their science support needs, and then looking at the way that their traditional knowledge and stewardship or cultural practices can inform, one, what's important to research and why, what are the locations that are often culturally important areas or sites species of resource importance to tribes, and then developing the methodologies, often an interdisciplinary multiple methods approach that spans everything from kind of more social research to more applied ecological forestry and ecological sampling methods to now even incorporating remote sensing such as LIDAR and other technologies to really understand at different scales everything from, a basketry plant resource to then how that's part of a certain habitat like oak woodlands to then how that fits into the broader forest type and the landscape, and then thinking about through the cultural perspective or the tribal knowledge part, how we determine what are the beneficial or negative effects of forest management or fire. And through that direct collaboration and cooperatively working together on projects, that informs a lot of my methods and my approach, but also learning from that tribal knowledge helps me in my interpretation and understanding the results of those of what we do in our findings, everything from paleoclimate studies to looking at kind of a historical perspective to even understanding how does this particular forest right now pre-restoration or pre-thinning treatments or post-fire after you've done the prescribed burn or wildfires gone through that particular area, how those conditions after the fire relate our understanding to understanding fire effects. And so I've been able to, through that opportunity of working with tribes, bring that understanding of fire and the cultural values to the front of the management and also helping influence the landscape restoration strategies, because we see that, one, we have to work cross jurisdictions and work at the government-to-government level, but also that there's an alignment of the public's interest for the condition and quality of forest or ecosystem services, and that also of the tribes, but often for the tribes, it's more specific to their particular ancestral territory and their interest in relating. One example being just not focusing on single species management, say like the spotted owl, but focusing on more holistic or ecosystem management approach of looking at all the species and how different species of interest, whether they're threatened, endangered, or sensitive species, or those ones of high cultural importance, are affected at different parts of their life history through fire. And then by that cultural knowledge, that helps inform the way that we might think about what we measure in our metrics, whether they're culturally important indicators, that sometimes maybe a botanist is only looking at the plants and the wildlife person is looking at the birds, but from a tribal perspective, holistically, you should be looking at all those together. And then building upon that tribal philosophy and teachings to help think about where we want to be as a success, as a series of successful restoration projects, what's kind of our endpoint? And if the endpoint isn't so much like a certain stage or condition, but for many tribes, it's an eco-cultural revitalization process that reintegrates human stewardship and responsibility back with active landscape management.
Can you talk a little bit more about that endpoint and what are the really human goals and landscape goals that you have for this work?
I think first and foremost for me, growing up here as part of the Karuk and Yurok community and living and still wanting to maintain those cultural practices and knowledge systems, it's the opportunity for me and my professional career to actively support tribal engagement, the representation of tribal values and interests in ecosystem management or landscape restoration strategies, supporting opportunities for tribal stewardship within their ancestral territories or their places of their homelands, and then ultimately promoting a healthy, more resilient landscape, even in the face of climate change and some of the unknowns that we might be experiencing for future generations, to promote food and water security and really the wellness of not only the tribal community, but also our broader American society and our public.
What does the general public need to know about traditional ecological knowledge and the practices that were arrested for a period of time but are now being implemented again?
I think it's important for the public to understand that Native cultures are living and that for many places where there was an importance of fire in the ecosystem, such as a natural fire regime, that there's this cultural dependency on fire. And that by working the tribes to incorporate that knowledge with Western scientific approaches, that we increase our capacity to adapt and evolve and work more efficiently together to understand the effects of environmental change that we're experiencing, and also looking for really what are win-win solutions. So we reduce the conflict around, say, perhaps the perception of being competitors for a scarce resource, such as certain foods or certain wildlife habitats, to being cooperators for abundance and seeing that not only is the traditional knowledge important in helping understand the past and the legacy of traditional management on the landscape, but also the impacts of American colonization and fire suppression and exclusion. But as we come into a new era of stewardship and looking at ecosystem management, the ways in which working directly with tribes and tribal families, particularly to reinstating traditional burning, helps achieve those goals that independently might not be so successful, but collaboratively and working together can be more successful.
Are you picking a hazel sticks for basket making?
Yeah. So right now they're budding out in some of the areas where it's been burned, there's some long straight shoots and other places where they've been coppiced or there's been a roadside trimming. Right now is the time. So you have to pay attention to the phenology and the plant stage. And there's a progression from kind of more southern to more northern, but also from lower to higher elevation. And if you're dependent upon that hazel for basket weaving, right now is the time to get it.
Are you weaving the baskets, or do you pass along the hazel sticks to a friend or family member to make the baskets?
I usually pick hazel to share with others, and then I have my own supply. So as I go to learn from the weavers, especially stick-on-stick for making, like, pack baskets or traps, I want to have my own supply so I can say, here, as a basket weaver, it's like, here's a bundle for you of 100 sticks, and then here's another bundle I've picked myself, so I have my own material to learn, and it's always respectful to compensate the elder weaver by providing material back to them, because so many people just say, I want to learn weaving, but don't know how to pick the material or how to process it or how to prepare it. And it's often a challenge for the basket weaver instructors to have enough material to teach people. And so I try to, as a gatherer, try to foster the opportunities to get as much resources as I can when they're seasonally available, have a little bit for my own self to be able to learn, but also to be able to give those and promote that living cultural aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's important to have fire for those materials, right? And if you don't have the fire, then those materials become so precious.
And if you're going to learn the right way, as I've been told, you need to have the highest and best quality material. And so many of the basket materials do better after burning. And it's even knowing the season of burning, how intense to burn the plant. You don't want to burn it too hot so it kills the roots, but just enough to top scorch it so it regrows back. And then also knowing the condition of how much light there is in the forest or moisture that affects its growth response. And so there's a range of learning all those little clues and things to understand the environment and then being at the right place at the right time to be able to pick it and then process it and share that wealth.
And Frank, I wanted to ask you too, like I know that Redwood National Park has started doing controlled burns in the park as well. Have you collaborated with them on that work?
Generally familiar with the Redwood National Park burning that they're doing over there, and they're managing that through a different policy lens or public land lens of ethnographic, maintaining ethnographic landscapes. And the National Park Service has recently revised or updated their non-timber forest products or forest product gathering policy, and working in their coordination with tribes, ideally as they burn areas in cooperation with tribes, then that would help foster access and opportunity for tribal harvesting. There's some challenges around the perspective of how much a tribe should be able to harvest, or tribal families or individuals, around the quantity of those resources. But I think as the tribes negotiate and work that out with the Park Service, there's a good opportunity there for partnership to expand that. I think it's interesting in one regard that the Park Service will emulate traditional burning or tribal burning, but then needs to make that additional step to work cooperatively to actually have descendants of that tribal territory, whether they're Yurok, Chulula, or Hoopa, or Wiat, wherever they might be, or Tolowa, to then be part of those fire management crews, to then, even though they're in their kind of fire, safety gear and their fire retardant pants and their Nomex, also carry that traditional knowledge and apply that, and then have the post-fire opportunity for access and for gathering to support those tribal families and harvesting from those burn areas. And a lot of times there's more of the public recreational values of maintaining the kind of the visual quality, but for the tribes it's really about getting in there and having an active role in that stewardship and then being able to have the policy and the regulation support their active uses of those post-fire resources.
Wow. Well, it sounds like some progress is being made, so that is hopeful, or it sounds hopeful.
Yeah, it is. It's again, it's learning and working together and building upon that relationship.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Lake. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I would say, I guess in closing, I feel really honored and privileged to be able to work with tribes, and particularly some of the elder basket weaver women that have shared with me and other elder men. And when we think about sustainability of forest and working and living with fire, that from a tribal perspective and philosophy, understanding the environment and being directly dependent upon it, but understanding that environment as your hardware store, your pharmacy, your supermarket, and your church, that we see that there is a place and an important role for human stewardship and responsibility with the environment. And often some of those teachings is thinking about the progression of the success of our work and advancement of the scientific methodologies and looking at the collaborations, that we have something more productive and healthier and the integrity of the forests and watersheds to leave to our grandchildren, and that our future generations will be our effectiveness monitors, and that hopefully we can give them something that's a better quality of life than we have today.
Thank you. That's great work and a very worthwhile goal.
Well, thank you. And for others and for the audience, if they look to what the Yurok and the Karuk tribe are doing here with landscape restoration, and I know in working with the Western Klamath Restoration Partnership as a coordinating scientist, there really is the integration of different knowledges and stewardship practices and trying to demonstrate that application on the ground. And so it's an exciting time, and in thinking about where we've been to where we're at and to where we're going, again, there's hope there, particularly for tribes and being more directly involved with the governance and stewardship and having a role in the landscape management of their territories.
It does sound hopeful. Thank you again, Dr. Lake, and thanks for the work that you do.
Yeah, thank you so much for the support and interest in my work.